its current state on 90.5 WKAR. I'm Mark Bayshore. A new book from the MSU Press looks at the cookbooks and food ways of Americans in the 1860s. In current state's Melissa Benmark joins us with more on the book and its author. Hi, Melissa.
Hey, Mark. Food in the Civil War era, The North, is officially out this week. It's the project of Helen Zoe Veit of MSU's History Department. And I talked with her about the growing interest in food history and her part in the MSU Press series.
We started a whole food series on American cooking, and we want to move more or less chronologically. And it's really in the middle of the 19th century that cookbooks start appearing in any great number in this country. And the Civil War is just such an amazing time period, and so many changes happened as a result of the war. So it seemed like a natural place to start.
I noticed there are two volumes planned, Civil War North and Civil War South.
Yes, I just finished. In fact, literally a few days ago, the Civil War South volume. So that's now in press, and that should be coming out next year.
What are some of the things that maybe people would find surprising about food in the Civil War era in the North?
I think there are all sorts of surprises. I at least was constantly being surprised and constantly sort of amused or confused by what I was finding in the cookbooks. I think one of the more surprising things might be how English some of the recipes seem, English as in from England or like British cookery. There's so many recipes that are based on puddings, for example, which is a culinary category that's pretty much disappeared. When we think of pudding, we think of a chocolate or some sort of a sweet dairy dessert. But for people in the 19th century, it was most often a savory dessert based on a flour batter. In fact, they often categorized puddings in the same section as pancakes because they were both made from a flour batter that would then get cooked. And you don't see a lot of foods here that I think people here think of as classic American cookery. For example, once in a while you'll see a recipe for apple pie or cookies, but those are pretty rare. There are many more recipes for custards or blancmange, which was a popular 19th century custard, or jumbles or whips, but not sort of what we think of as cookies or regular desserts like that. You also don't see things like a lot of cheese. It's pretty rare to see cheese. It's rare to see ground beef. It's rare to see chocolate, things like that. Another surprise for me in this era was that when we think about 19th century food or food in the past, people tend to say, well, back then it was very local. People ate locally by necessity. But so many of these recipes were not local at all. Domestically, just within the United States, there was already a very robust food transportation network so that people on the East Coast, for example, would eat Midwestern wheat all the time. There was a huge variety of foods that were transported across the country. People in the Midwest would eat oysters that were harvested on the East Coast. And also people ate ingredients that were harvested or that were gathered from abroad. All these sorts of recipes contain ingredients such as cinnamon or tapioca or vanilla or chocolate or coffee or salt, things that were routinely imported from abroad. So I think knowing more about this era can complicate our own sort of knee-jerk idea that, well, today food is modern, it's global. Back in great-grandmother's day, it was local, and it's actually much more complicated than that.
That's interesting, too, from the standpoint that you associate that period of time with being one of great privation in terms of people not having a lot of fancy stuff.
Yes. Well, that's another part of the story is that it is really an examination of the sources themselves. So this book, Food in the Civil War Era, The North, contains excerpts from 5 cookbooks. But the people who were lucky enough to buy the cookbooks and the people at whom the cookbooks were aimed were almost only middle-class Americans. And so you have to really keep that in mind when you look at the cookbooks to say this wasn't how all Americans were cooking. This was really a very specific segment of the population that had the resources to cook in this way.
So did you tackle the issue of soldiers' rations in this?
A little bit. In truth, I talk much more about the war itself in the next cookbook, Food in the Civil War of the South, because the war affected food in the South so much more deeply than it did in the North. In the South, soldiers' rations were incredibly diminished early on in the war, so that soldiers themselves had to really forage for what they were eating most of the time. And ordinary civilians in the South, too, saw incredible hardships as a result of the war, in large part because also of the northern blockade of southern shores, so that all of those imports, for example, southerners imported huge amounts of salt, which they used to flavor their food, but also as a crucial preservative for meat and butter, they were no longer getting that. So, you know, it really, that's just one example. It changed all sorts of ways that Southerners ate. And in a way, what the Civil War era cookbooks show about food in the urban North was that many Northerners were insulated from those sorts of privations. So the contrast between the two regions is really striking.
When you said there wasn't much cheese, actually the first thing that popped into my mind was that the agricultural cycles would be interrupted by the war and that things like salt might not be available.
That was definitely true in the South, at least. But in the North, they continued to import salt. A lot of salt, strangely, or at least surprisingly, was imported from Wales at this time period. So those imports could continue in the North.
What prompted you to delve into this in such detail? I mean, are you a big cooking person yourself? Or
I do love to cook. I when I started graduate school many years ago now as a prospective historian, I didn't think I would study food, but I got interested in World War I and food, and I wrote my first historical monograph, my full length book about food in the World War I era. And so in a way, thinking about food during another war was a natural transition.
It seems like so much of what comes into vogue starts out as poor people's food, frankly. Caviar was once the leftovers of the fish. You know, things like andouille sausage were ways of preserving meat. And then, you know, butternut squash, which no one had ever heard of in my world until, like, you know, 5 years ago. And now, you know, guys are making it into ravioli in high-end restaurants. Is there anything that you can think of from the Civil War era that was basically put together because that was what they had that now has a certain cachet to it?
I think that's absolutely true. One immediate example that comes to mind is the use of organs, which occasionally you'll see now in fancy restaurants, which are embracing the snout-to-tail cookery that's become popular. But back then, people did that sort of cooking using, you know, an incredible variety of organs and parts of the animal, absolutely by necessity. In fact, that's another thing that's interesting about these cookbooks is that although they were aimed at a middle-class readership, it shows how that even among middle-class Americans, using a huge amount of food and not wasting food was so much more a part of cooking than it is today. Another part of cooking that you see in these cookbooks very clearly is how much preservation played a part in regular cooking. Most, or at least many of these recipes doubled as a form of preservation, from making homemade alcohols to making jams to potting meats or curing things, salting them. Preservation was really part of what cooking was because it was before reliable refrigeration of any kind. And so it's very interesting to think that many of the flavors we associate with this era really are the flavors of preservation.
And now we have Mark Ruhlman putting out books on salt-cured meats.
That's right, exactly. Yeah, that's right. It's become, you know, preserving in general, canning has become popular again, in part because of the same reasons that we also feel now that our current ways of producing food aren't sustainable. And back then, they weren't possible. So for the same reasons that we're now embracing things like the idea of local food or the idea of snout-to-tail cookery, people then did it by necessity every day.
So have you tried to make some of these recipes that you're writing about?
I have. I don't cook from them extensively. As you'll see, you were looking at the calves, brains, fritters a moment ago. They don't all sound incredibly appealing, I think, to modern taste. But some of them do. Some of them sounded really interesting. I had a dinner party a month or two ago where I invited some friends. And I tried to cook entirely from these cookbooks. And it was very interesting. I had spent so much time with these recipes, but it was the first time that I had really cooked from them myself. And it showed me how impressionistic many of the instructions are. Temperature is an obvious one. They didn't have a way to control the temperature of their ovens in a numerical way. They couldn't just set it to 350 degrees. They didn't have a way to keep it at that temperature for long. or even to know precisely, you know, what temperature it was at. They also didn't have standardized measurements. So they couldn't just say a cup or a teaspoon. They would say things like a heaping salt spoonful or a tumblerful or a wine glassful or the weight of 6 eggs in sugar was a common term. So I was doing a lot of guessing. But things turned out, I don't know if they tasted exactly as they would have in the 19th century, but they were quite quite interesting. My favorite of the dishes that I tried was a squash pie. It tasted very much like a pumpkin pie would. It was the same basic idea. Of course, a pumpkin is a kind of squash. But I used acorn squash instead, and it was delicious. It had a really delicate flavor. I was really excited. It's one I'll definitely be making again.
Dr. Helen Veith, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much for talking with me.
And again, the book is Food in the Civil War Era, The North, by Helen Veith. She spoke with current state's Melissa Benmark.